Hey folks, welcome to the show. Hey Sharad, how's it going, man? Today we are going to talk to a contextual banking solutions expert. Contextual banking solutions is part of the official description we have of his business.
Yeah, and it's return of the fintech. We had a bunch of fintech companies who came on our show, and then we had a little bit of non-fintech names, and we're back into very, very trendy fintech with BNPL, credit card, throwing all the buzzwords in there, and we have something there.
Yeah, man, I think I was facing some withdrawal symptoms, so it's good to get back into that. Yeah, Ram is like, you losers, you have withdrawal from these things. But yes, we do. So we have with us Ramanathan RV. I think we can call him Ram, co-founder of Hyperface. Welcome to the show.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to be here and talk about fintech and all things. Like you said, yeah, it's probably signaling the comeback of the fintech. I think we'll see a lot more action in the coming months. Looking forward to that. But it's great to be here and talk about all things fintech.
No, pleasure is all ours. So Ram, I would love to start with a bit about your personal journey, your own background. What were you doing before Hyperface, and what kind of led you to what you're doing as of now, as well as your partnership with Aishwarya on the business? So, you know, just to kind of set the scene here.
Absolutely. Look, I come from an engineering background. I started my career as an engineer in one of the ML divisions at Amazon. So I'm still an engineer by heart, and still love to do code reviews and design reviews as much as possible whenever I can find time. Now, before starting Hyperface, I was running JustPay, which is a payments company. We wrote the UPI. We did a lot of things with regards to making payments really seamless, friction-free. Right? Now, we started Hyperface because we looked at the landscape of overall banking and, in fact, the broader BFSI itself. And as digital proliferation is happening, right, into the digital workflows, placing financial products in the context of that, right, that's actually becoming far more meaningful for the customers. Right, and it's not that this concept did not exist. Bajaj Finance has been running on top of this concept for a long time, right? Like, you go to a two-wheeler showroom, and then at the end of the purchase, there's a person who's sitting there with a bench saying loans and EMIs, right? And that pattern repeats across the commerce ecosystem today, right? Yeah. Any large electronic showroom or any large automobile showroom, right? So our housing, right? So across all of these places, you've had those embedded journeys in the physical world. Right. And now it's starting to make sense in the digital world as well, right? But you know, in integrating this in the digital world is a lot more complex because of the flexibility that digital offers. It also comes with a lot of complexities which needs to be controlled, unlike the physical implementation, right? And that's where Hyperface is bringing about a change, or rather we are helping that evolution take place, right? We are, in fact, one of the category creating companies. Embedded banking in India doesn't exist in a big way as a category.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We are creating that category with a small start, which is focused on credit cards. Right. Of course, we will venture into other banking products in due course of time, but credit cards is a starting point for us.
Mm.
And Aishwarya has been a great support for us. Right, it is it's half banking product,
yeah,
and half technology product. Right, what we deal with on a daily basis is a lot of risk and compliance and regulation. It's InfoSec. Right, and these are all things that Aishwarya has pretty much done throughout her career, having launched Kotak 811 instead of Kotak Bank, which is a digital bank,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
Within the Kotak ecosystem, right? And that's what we are now trying to do outside of the four walls of the banking ecosystem, right? Mm-hmm. How can we bring in a third party to embed any banking product and then do so in the most responsible way and scalable way?
Right.
So that's the challenge that we embarked upon. And obviously, she brings the banking flavor and I bring the technology flavor to the table.
Right. I mean, the thing is that a good way to understand the business is in terms of who your customers are, right? I mean, and you like mentioned that you're providing embedded offerings for end-to-end, you know, program management of sorts, starting with credit cards. And naturally, there are other things also which are part of the suit. So when it comes to an embedded offering, typically you will be dealing with banks, you'll be dealing with fintechs, you'll be dealing with non-financial institutions like brands. Who's your customer? Where do you make the money?
The success of these implementations matter a lot more to the banks, mm-hmm. even than brands, right? If you look at the core business functionality versus a peripheral business functionality, right? It's for the banks, it is bread and butter, mm-hmm. and anything that actually changes here, the characteristic of the product, if it changes significantly, then they have a lot to lose. Whereas for brands, it's an addition, right? It's a plus one product feature or plus one product offering on top of, let's say, their bunch of offerings. And particularly, I'm talking about e-commerce brands, right? Today, if you look at, Big Basket versus Zepto functions without a co-branded credit card. Big Basket is, as part of the Tata ecosystem, has a co-branded credit card, but both are able to run their business, right? But a credit card as part of the product portfolio across the banking ecosystem, if you see, that is a very core offering for all the reasonably sized banks in the country, right? And that's why we anchor this a lot more on the bank side rather than on the brand side. Not to say that brands don't have problems,
sure.
right? To give you an example, today we recently launched a very large omnichannel co-brand. Right. And they have an umbrella of brands under them. And one of the biggest problems that they want to solve is attribution. If I actually, how many credit cards am I able to issue via brand A versus brand B? Right? That attribution is a big problem for them. And we solve that, right? And the way we look at this is, while we are talking about embedded banking and our primary clients tend to be the banks, issuing banks themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But where there is a large problem to be solved, which unlocks a lot of value, be it anchored on the brand side, we actually go ahead and solve that problem, right? And in that case, the brand becomes the client for us. The attribution problem is first and foremost, in fact, only the problem of the brand.
Right.
The bank has nothing to do with it, right? But the overall program success hinges on solving these problems together.
Right.
It's not like one thing versus another. Right. Hope I was able to answer the question. We index so much on the banking side because it's a very regulatory driven product, right? Mm-hmm. Within the compliance guardrails, within the InfoSec guardrails, we need to solve a lot of problems. Right. So that's why we tend to work, let's say, 80% of our time goes to working closely with the bank.
And what are the, I mean, the reason why I think my question is coming from is when it comes to, things like, APIs, SDKs, kind of tailoring them for different use cases for banking institutions. There are a number of companies, right, in the ecosystem now. We have spoken a couple of times with M2P. Right. And interestingly, M2P raised a bunch of capital like a week or two after the show. But like, let's not take credit for that. But at the end of the day, I mean, they're also, kind of setting up payment use cases, lending use cases, credit card use cases. Right. And they're also working closely with NBFCs and banks so that they can navigate and track such kind of transactions with other non-financial players or other fintechs. So how do you, it's a very cliche question, what's the differentiation here or what's the player, what's the secret sauce how are things different? Would love to, you know, get a sense around that. Is it just a question of you are way more focused on a particular segment, so you're going deeper and deeper into that, or is there something else?
See, M2P's product suite, if you see it, right? It's a lot of their focus is on the core infra services.
Yeah.
They talk about core banking system, clearing systems, processing systems, the card management, the plastic management systems, debit card management system, right? So these are all very core infra related softwares, banking softwares,
yeah,
that they offer, right? LOS, LMS, right? By choice, we've decided that we are not going to offer the core banking software products.
Got it.
Right? Our competition is not Infosys. Our competition is not First Data. It's not an M2P. Right? It is about the context in which the particular product is being offered to the customer.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And to that end, that's why if you see, our software powers probably a percentage of the overall, say, a credit card product of the bank, mm-hmm, or debit card product or prepaid card product, right? So we actually go after the use cases of embedded banking because there's a lot more problem to solve there. Like, I will give you one example there, right? Let's say one of the e-commerce companies wants to create two different onboarding journeys,
mm-hmm,
journey A, journey B, right? For their different customer segments. Okay. Now, these two journeys have different behaviors. Let's say the conversion rates tend to be different, right? Now, for the bank, it doesn't matter too much, right? Or the LOS system, it doesn't matter much because that handles 100% of the applications that are being submitted to the bank. But in the embedded journey, when one journey is able to create for a brand, I'm saying, one journey is able to give 10% better conversion than another journey, that becomes a very important decision point for them. Mm-hmm. Right? And this area is not helped by the core systems, but by a company like ours.
Mm.
Right? We build tools that are tailor focused, that are really focused towards improving their embedded use cases,
right,
Say in case of credit cards, it happens to be co-branded credit cards. But tomorrow it can be about loan journeys. It can be about insurance embedding, right? It can be about the banking product that we want to focus. For the next few years, we're going to focus only on credit cards. But what I'm talking about is that surface area requires a lot more focus as well. And like you said, we are focusing there, building tools there, and building a lot of depth there, and trying to improve the conversions and the KPIs for that program as a whole.
Got it.
Right? They're not worried about the rest of the programs. In fact, most of the times, if they see, the core credit card companies do not worry too much about the success of the programs for the bank. Their worry is more about, look, am I computing interest correctly? Am I posting to ledger correctly? Are my end-of-day balances tallying? Right, reconciliation with card networks. The problem statements are extremely different than compared to a company that is in the embedded space like ours.
So, interesting, right? I mean, let's take that e-commerce example as well, right? I mean, one of your clients is trying to create a unique onboarding journey for a set of clients. The ultimate aim for that e-commerce company is to increase sales, right? I mean, let's talk from a high level. They want to churn out as many, remove as much products and increase sales, and that's how they get monetized. Do you think sort of in our where we are right now, a credit card is one such tool which can help doing that? And when you look at a credit card, obviously there's a whole loyalty element to it, which sort of gives rewards, but there is also lending, like a free credit period as well, right? So and you're obviously focused on credit card right now. How important is that tool and where do you see it going? We understand, like, we read about credit card penetration in India is very low, sub 6%, 7%. So people talk about huge growth runway. Then there is this whole UPI element, UPI branded cards. Then there is a whole discussion about merchant discount rate. And, you know, there are just so many moving pieces. How do you see credit card being an important tool going forward with the ultimate objective for the retailer to churn out more money or churn out more sales?
Right. This is a very important impact. This is a question that's most asked, almost like a VC question to us, right? This is the market that we've chosen. If you look at the metrics around the world, right? US has more than 650 million credit cards for a population of less than 300 million people, right? Whereas India has about 100 million credit cards, a little over 100 million credit cards for a population of 1.4 billion, right? So the headroom for expansion from those macro numbers looks to be very high, but it all hinges on how we are able to grow as a country, right? Our per capita GDP needs to grow higher. Then the household debt to GDP ratio will allow room for a product like credit card to at least at the household level, if not at an individual level.
Right.
And there is a it's a lot more dependent on factors such as formalization, growth of the economy, right? And then the expansion of the credit cards will happen, right? First, the expansion of credit will happen, and then the expansion of credit cards will happen. But we're very confident that these things are playing out in India. Information is becoming more structured. Economy is getting formalized a lot more. And our digital channels are getting more penetrated into tier 2, tier 3, tier 4 centers as well, right? I don't think India's post growth will happen that fast. But thanks to RuPay and UPI coming in together, I think that will grow. And of course, the online services are growing as well, right? Amazon, Flipkart, Meesho, these companies are able to reach a lot more pin codes. So that gives us the avenues to spend. Now, the ability to repay must be there. The intent to repay must be there. Provided these things come together, we're very confident that India will see emergence of, say, even a billion credit cards. Right? Mm-hmm. Suppose, you know, headline numbers aside, we feel even with the current 24% CAGR growth, right, we're looking at doubling of credit cards every 3 years, right? That in itself will take us to 400 million if you're able to maintain this growth rate from where we are today, right? In the next 6 years, by 2030. Right? And our bet is that it will happen a lot more faster because the disposable income increases at a certain threshold at the household level. Mm-hmm. And that is when a lot of magic happens. That is when credit card becomes much more meaningful for the customers, right? And it's not a growth function, like a linear growth function. It's more of a step function. Anybody who crosses that threshold becomes eligible for credit, right? And that step function is what is happening today in India with the formalization of workforce and more opportunities coming from across the world by way of employment, right? But will we ever have like billion, 2 billion credit cards? I think it's very hard to know if we will get there.
Mm-hmm.
Very hard to predict. But we know that this is a product that has been blessed by the regulator, has been understood by the customers, understood by the banks, understood by the merchants. And hence that is a perfect state to actually scale in a really large way.
Right.
Any other new credit product for it to scale, all of these entities have to understand, right? Customers, regulator, banks, merchants, that they all will have to understand the rules of the game, which will take phenomenally long amount of time. It's not that we are opposed to it. In fact, we would welcome that, right? Because as a startup, any new initiatives, we gain upper hand rather than the incumbents, right? Because we can move fast. So we would welcome that, right? But in the absence of that, the current product, the ability for that to scale will happen through digital channels, which is the partnership between the banks and the entities, right? I'll give you one example and we'll move on to the next question. In 2008, I was part of Bank Bazaar, right? It was one of the, at that time, fintech as a word was not even around, right? And at that time, we used to wonder, why is it that the SME lending in the country is very, very poor, mm-hmm. right? Because the sales process to close an SME loan product, right, that's extremely cumbersome, right, due to a variety of factors, right? Today, there is one thing that we can reduce, right? You look at a business like the Khata Book.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, Khata Book is able to reach almost every bakery in the country, right? I'm taking Khata Book as an example. There could be a combination of 4-5 companies, right, which are able to reach these kind of businesses. And so tomorrow, let's say we want to sell a financial product to, let's say, all the bakeries in the country, right? It is very much possible. It was not possible 20 years ago. It's possible today, mm-hmm. right? Now, what is that product we have to sell? What is the financial product we should be selling? It can be a theft insurance, for example,
mm-hmm.
right? And today you put a banner across 4-5 apps, and then every merchant, every bakery is going to be able to see that, right? And they may want to purchase, they may not want to purchase, that's all up to them, right? But the ability for us to reach is there today, right? And that's a big change. I think that's a huge change.
You know, what do they need? They need working capital financing now. That is our belief, which is when we speak to a lot of, we get that, like a lot of mom and pop and MSMEs. I mean, we generally believe working capital financing is one of the biggest roadblocks that we've realized. So, no, I mean, I was just commenting on that. Sorry, Nikhil, you were saying something.
No, I was just wondering, you know, when you were kind of talking about the credit card market at large, now, US has been a very interesting leading indicator, but US is where you still have, you know, standalone private networks, economics are fairly robust, you know, from the payment ecosystem standpoint. In India, government has made payments into a utility. They have done a lot of heavy lifting there. You know, there's a fair amount of price capping and restrictions on, you know, how much merchants, whatever money can come out of merchants or issuers, etc., right? And to add to that, now there is also chat about making the networks also interoperable, in the sense that consumers will have the option of choosing whether they want to take a Visa or a MasterCard, right? So there's a lot of churn which is happening there. And in your view, when it comes to the, obviously India is a very credit hungry country, so the segment as a whole is expected to grow. I think that's a no-brainer, right? And the data would front that. But do you think that growth is coming from the commerce end of the spectrum, or from commerce / consumption end of the spectrum, that it actually leads to higher sales and higher demand? And, you know, that's why it's something which is interesting enough for banks also to kind of pursue. Or you think, if you look at credit cards as a standalone business, which in my view personally is something quite challenged as we speak. So just want your 2 cents on that.
You're touching upon a plethora of topics, Nikhil. I think there's the debate about whether zero MDR is a good policy or not. I think we still don't have a proper view on that, right? But from what it's worth, look, some of these measures have pushed the entities to be able to be more creative in how they are creating those business cases, right? But on the flip side, the absence of a proper revenue pool means that we don't invest a lot in technology.
Yeah.
Like particularly technology that needs a lot of evolution. Right, because that's where it becomes capital intensive, right? You need to spend 500 crores, 1,000 crores in creating better and better machines or better and better algorithms, right? So we are not able to do that because of the absence of revenue pool. But at the same time, the innovation, right, by way of, let's say, QR codes and enabling the merchant to be able to collect money through QR codes, I think that has actually created acceptance points throughout the country. That instead of deploying very heavy cost machines, right, where that tends to be extremely expensive, particularly in a country like India. But just yesterday, I was talking about the economics of credit cards. If you see today, printing a credit card takes about 120 rupees plus GST.
Yeah.
It makes it about 130 rupees or so, right? And then the delivery of a credit card takes another 100 rupees, right? This is just to put that the payment instrument in the hands of the customer.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then what was the amount that was spent to acquire the customer, verify the customer, right? And underwrite and approve the customer, right? You put all of these together, it tends to be about 3,500 rupees, right?
Yeah.
Now, for the product to break even after giving this instrument to the customer, right? It takes about 8 months or 9 months for the bank.
Yeah.
Right, which is very high. Now, if you actually do the entire math in dollar terms, right? Because these things don't change dramatically between a developed country and a developing country, right? The cost of printing tends to be $1.5, and the dispatch cost tends to be about $3, yeah. Right? Now, just $4, say we are able to put the instrument in the hands of the customer, right? The CAC and the other economics tend to be almost at the same level as well, right? So their break-even point is much, much more closer than what is there in India,
of course,
right? And now, how do you break this conundrum? Is it by increasing the revenue pool, or is it by innovating on the distribution channels? Mm-hmm. Right? I think distribution channel innovation is a lot more creative process. Rather than you know, trying to tweak the pricing.
So the Bajaj Finance playbook.
Yeah, Bajaj Finance playbook, right? Where you be innovative about that model. In fact, I think the rest of the world probably woke up to that model
mm-hmm.
much later
mm-hmm.
than India, right? The subvention model, right? I think we were very creative about that, right? And hence they were able to grow that business significantly,
mm-hmm.
right? So in a way, see, tech is always about constraint. You put constraints and then tech figures out a way, mm-hmm. right? Sometimes you create barriers. For instance, we are not able to deploy cost measures for money,
mm-hmm.
right? But a lot of times the solution emerges. So to that end, I'm not swinging this way or that way. I'm just a curious bystander who is looking for opportunities to create solutions within the constraints that's being given to us.
Mm-hmm.
And if you see the pricing caps, it's not just in India. If you look at debit card, credit card pricing caps, these are being instituted across the world, particularly in the European economies, right?
Yeah.
This is becoming more and more commonplace. Germany has a restriction on credit cards, while UK and Australia have instituted caps on debit cards.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So payments is more and more, it's becoming utility. And to that end, the US is perhaps an exceptional market rather than the default to be a reference point.
But, you know, I mean, and obviously, you know, you look at things more from a business standpoint, and obviously you're at the end of the day, a technology player. So these use cases are something that you work around and you create value in that. But like, say for someone like me and Sharad, we are looking at this more as like third party commentators, right? And it's an easier job, but what usually we often ponder about is that, you know, if you look at things like BNPL, if you think that look at things like, you know, zero interest EMIs, that effectively leads to, you know, does it effectively lead to bad underwriting or bad behavior? I mean, people who don't really have the servicing capacity end up buying things which they don't need, or, you know, effectively the credit cycle expands, and that leads to other structural problems maybe like 3 or 4 or 5 years you know, from now. Even today, if you're looking at like generally unsecured credit, you know, or unsecured PL in the country, I mean, the regulators are already looking at it very, very closely, right? Credit cards are slightly different because it's shorter term. So if there is some delinquent behavior, it comes out pretty quickly. So maybe they sit in a different bucket. But yeah, I mean, from a 30,000 feet perspective, what's your take on that?
Yeah, see, indebtedness is a big problem,
mm-hmm.
right? We've always been a very savings focused. We've always had a very savings focused mindset, right? But now there's a dramatic shift that is happening amongst the younger generation, where there is prolific spending that's coming in, right? And products like no-cost EMI actually tends to create that impulse behavior. So listening to one of the TV shows, and there a man was remarking that he had gone to a mobile shop along with his friend. And his friend was purchasing mobile phone. Okay. And the salesperson in that mobile shop offered him something, saying, look, this Bluetooth headphone is worth about 3,000 rupees, but you can take it home for 0 rupees. And we will just put an EMI on your bank account, right? And we can mandate on the bank to give you an EMI, right? So the ability to take a product without having to pay anything at that point in time, right? It's very enticing, right? And it's very hard to say no to. So these impulse behaviors can potentially lead customers down on a slippery path, right? But at the same time, it is almost like it becomes a compelling need in the moment of time when you actually need it, right? And if you're not able to avail credit, it has like insanely difficult consequences, right, for that person, right? It could be a loss of a life also, right? If for a healthcare emergency, a person is not able to avail credit, right? So it's a double-edged sword, right? I think a lot of fintech companies should take this on rather than having the mindset of maximizing credit for everybody and then pushing credit where it is not needed as well. Rather than that, taking a more responsible approach to advertise credit products. Like, again, look, instead of actually making this a legislation or a dictate or a very prescriptive instructions to every fintech, I think the marketplace will figure out the solution by itself. Right? There will be very creative solutions that will emerge for assisting customers, whether a customer would have to make that decision at that point in time or not, right, to purchase. Right? I think the technology itself will bring out solutions. Mm-hmm. In the absence of that is when I think alarm bells should go around in the banking ecosystem, that we are creating a country of a lot of debt and people. Right? And that is not what we would want to create.
And some of these zero cost EMIs or BNPL, I mean, the cost of debt has also gone down for a consumer, right? I mean, the merchant is sort of subsidizing that in a way. That's also sort of increased. I just want to ask you a little bit about your business, right? You use the word embedded finance as well, and the way we think of it is, right? Like, I mean, it's sort of API forward, and it's where a lot of services are sort of bundled together within the same, let's call it website or same platform, be it loans, credit cards, maybe insurance, maybe even investments, right? So from the way you're sort of helping your clients, what are those touch points that you're hitting? And credit cards is one which is essentially short-term credit for your ultimate user. What are the other things that that can be tackled given the infrastructure or rails, if you will, that you are sort of building with your clients? For example, that e-commerce example.
Right. Look, a lot of these are about digitization. The journeys and the workflows have to be digitized and have to be offered at a as a premium offering without the sticker of having a premium offering, right? So the North Star example that we always give when we talk about credit cards to our prospective customers is, look at the way Apple has implemented their Apple credit card. That experience, right? The unboxing experience, the app experience, right? How can we create a similar experience in India, right? And that is possible, right? With the kind of software provides that we have today, that is possible, right? And this is not just things about experience, right? It's also about you look at onboarding journey. Apple prides in saying that they give a credit card to a customer with just 5 taps, right? One of the best workflows that they have is with just 5 taps they are able to render the credit card to the customer.
Right.
Now, that's the level of experience we have to create for our customers also, right? And our focus day in and day out, we just obsess over that and work with the banks closely to create that kind of experience. Not just for the onboarding, but post-onboarding as well. And to create better and better. I can give you another example, just right from our own thought process, right? Mm-hmm. If you look at the mandate management, so this is one behavior where RBI came hard and said that, look, recurring payments cannot go through simply because customer has put the card detail on the file. Right? It has to be driven through a consented architecture. Right? And the regulator also went a step ahead and told the banks that, look, you have to provide an interface for the customer to be able to go and say, I want this mandate, I don't want that mandate. Right? Remove that mandate as well. Right? Today, how many bank apps have that ability for, say, a customer to go there and change it?
Mm-hmm.
They stop a particular subscription, right? Saying that, look, I don't want this from tomorrow.
Right.
But that capability is not there, right? We want to bring that kind of capability on the front to the customer.
Mm.
Right? Be it within a mobile banking app or be it within the third-party app. Mm. Suppose you want to have this ability inside of your Flipkart credit card or Amazon credit card, and within that app itself, right? Why are we not able to do that today? Right? We will bring about those features. Right? So, taking a step back, so we look at what are all the points where customer experience can be improved, where onboarding journeys can be made much, much more better than what it is today, and can be offered in the context of what the customer wants, more intelligently placed, right? And this overall will expand the space significantly, right? And the way I even see this is, it's almost like a digital canvas, right? And on this canvas, we are able to draw upon a lot of things. And things are, we really take these things as flexible, being suspended in time, but over on the time axis, if you see, these features will keep evolving.
It's I have a two-part as well, just because of we talk about credit card business, right? So one thing, we obviously, when you compare, I mean, we've had Western credit cards as well, and one thing clearly that jumps out to me is the rewards program or the points is significantly more lucrative in the West, even if you adjust it for currencies and all. You're incentivized, you actually do the math, and it's significantly more powerful, be it Air Miles or Aeroplan and whatnot, right? Is for your client, which is building a loyalty program also like a key consideration to sort of do that? Because anyways, India lags in terms of how much power those loyalty programs has. Is that important? And second is, you know, talking about loyalty programs and credit cards, we talked about sort of being more customer friendly and sort of, can it become more granular, or like how granular can we be? Can say, let's say Nikhil and Sharad, let's say they have similar income profiles. Can he get a dedicated credit card which caters to him, his spending patterns, and I get a credit card which is sort of tailored to my spending patterns? Can you go to that level of granularity in future? I mean, is that possible?
Okay. Again, this goes back to the way customers perceive credit cards, right? And in fact, the way banks actually think for credit card, there are no ideal customers of credit cards.
Right.
Unfortunately, even within a program, if you see, within a particular program, be it a cashback card also, right, the way customers perceive and use these cards tend to be on a spectrum, right? And hence, that's why credit cards, very difficult to find an ideal TG,
right,
for a particular credit card, right? And for that end, rewards, I don't see a need to maximize the rewards. But to keep it at the point where, let's say, the customer feels that this is good enough and I'm going to be using this card and will be using this card on this brand, right? Is 5% enough for Amazon customers, or does 6% make it much more different, right? I think that's when you do the plotting and then figure out, okay, this yields the optimal outcome, right? Mm. So we don't see a point in pushing that number higher and higher, right? And it means different things to different customers. A credit card means a different thing to different customers. So to that end, I don't see us creating more, significantly more rewards and competing on rewards as a dimension, right? Rather, we would like to see a lot more stories being told about with credit cards. Right? The nice thing is that, for instance, there is this credit card, there is a neobank by the name Tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What this company does is they actually plow back the rewards or the cashbacks into your favorite sustainability-focused programs.
Right.
Right, and for a better tomorrow. Right. Then there is a Manchester United credit card, right, which built around the identity that, look, I'm a Manchester United fan, and so that I'm using this payment product, which has an affiliation to that. Right. Now the story is being told around the football. There's not much about rewards or anything, right? So it's about the stories that we tell, right? For instance, there should be a health-focused plan, right? Which should reward you if you have right behaviors around, if you purchase at organic stores, right? And those kind of things will evolve, right? To me, I see this almost as Maslow's hierarchy, where the cashback is probably like the lowest common denominator.
Mm-hmm.
But the storytelling takes it to another level of maturity.
Interesting. In terms of, you know, your business, how does the revenue model work? And how difficult is it to sell to banks?
It is extremely difficult to sell to banks. They are extremely difficult customers as well. Right. Winning banks is one thing, but then being able to service banks is yet another huge challenge. Right?
Yep.
I've been doing that for a good part of my life, and it is still a difficult thing. Every day we come in and then we look at, okay, let's gear up for a 1 year long sales cycle with this bank.
Mm. Mm.
So it is indeed very difficult, but once. What's interesting is,
but is it easy to retain them as customers?
It is easy to retain them.
Yeah.
It's very easy to retain them as customers because there's a lot more hunger for technology.
Yeah,
right? That leads to creation of a lot more technology. Once, let's say, a particular module has been installed. Right, then additional requirements keep coming from the banks. Now that tends to create a lot of stickiness.
Yes.
Right, but good technology companies actually survive through those additional requirements. They create those additional requirements and are able to continue to deliver value to the bank rather than emerge as a rent-seeking company instead.
Understood. Yep.
So that's very important. So we keep a very keen eye on that. Right? We don't want to be labeled as a rent-seeking company.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And on the revenue model?
So we price our technologies through the SaaS model.
Yeah.
Right? In the SaaS business model is how we actually price it to them. It's a lot more palatable. I would say, in fact, it was a lot more palatable until a few years ago, right? But today, what's happening is that there is a concerted push
mm-hmm.
towards implementing the solutions within the data center of the cloud accounts of the banks.
Yeah.
Right. So that puts the entire SaaS model in a very difficult place,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the infra is now technically owned by the bank.
Right.
So should we go back to the licensing model, right? So I think the ecosystem will figure these things out over a period of time. But why this is happening, if you see, there is more push for owning the data
mm-hmm.
And being responsible for the data that's being accumulated within a bank, where there is a push towards the bank controlling this entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Not leaving it to technology companies, which was a lot more prevalent in the past 30 years of history, if you see all the technology companies, right? It's been that, okay, the bank owns only the very core systems and everything else tends to get outsourced.
Right.
But that model itself is now being called to question, primarily because of data security requirements and data privacy guidelines.
Right.
Understood. So, like, is the idea being like, say for instance, I mean, we talk about like a product, right, which is out there. Say Amazon ICICI, right? Now they have a credit card. So an ICICI would give a mandate to a platform or company like yours, and there will be some initial, I would say, setup cost, and then you'll have a recurring stream, and that gives ICICI the flexibility to set up a co-branding program with Amazon, with Flipkart, with Zomato, with anyone. Is that roughly got it?
Absolutely, yeah. The GTM becomes much more faster, right, for a bank with someone like...
So they have the architecture, they have the flexibility now, they have the framework to deal with multiple enterprise partners, correct?
Correct.
Right. And what you get as a business is not dependent on the transaction flow. So it's not like a per transaction type of a structure.
We don't price it to the transaction flow at this point of time. Right. We're pricing it still as a technology company.
But is that the norm even, like in other countries? I mean, is that even a model which exists? Yeah, okay.
Not really. In fact, a lot of other companies facing, particularly in the West, price it at a percentage of the revenue.
Exactly. Yeah. But that you see that also happening here, or not at the moment?
Definitely. We see that happening here,
right,
as well.
Right, understood. And just one thing, Ram, before we let you go, in terms of fundraising, you kind of raised a bunch of capital, right? I mean, your seed round has been pretty lumpy as it is, and you have a fairly diverse number of marquee institutions on board. How was the experience in terms of raising capital? Was there like something, was a lot lost in translation, and you had to do a lot of heavy lifting to get the investors, aligned on your vision, or there was fair level of investor awareness already, and it was an easy sell?
Yeah, it was an easy sell because the team had played out in other countries of embedded banking and co-branded credit cards.
Right.
It's for instance, the Marketa story is very well known the industry community.
Yeah.
Right. So what we did was our business model was variation on top of that. Right. So it was a fairly easy sell. Right. But I think everyone underestimated the effect of COVID, mm-hmm, and the downstream consequences of the regulatory actions that followed COVID. Right. In terms of, let's say, how to do things and data privacy guidelines that came in, which actually created a lot more uncertainties in the ecosystem, right? But now I think we are well past that,
mm-hmm,
and we can now focus on the growth, right? Because the guardrails are put in place.
Yeah.
Regulator has actually made it very, very clear now, and it's almost in black and white, and hence we can now look forward to rollout and growth and further distribution.
Well, no, we wish you all the best, Ram, for future and much bigger milestones. It was a pleasure catching up, and I would definitely watch out for Hyperface and cheer you from the side. And good luck for your journey ahead. And with that, it's Nikhil Arora with me, Sharad Tupran, signing off.